Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, for Imperial and Mexicali Valleys. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. And our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. Short.
Right, and to the point.
And to the point.
Okay, download voice. What am I going to say? Hey, welcome this morning, and welcome to our special segment that we do every week now. It's called Maria's Community Calendar. And
gosh,
Maria
gosh.
Goes out and hustles around the community and figures out every cool thing that's going on, like from a human service standpoint anyway, and brings it to the show. So I know you guys are ready with your pens and pads of paper.
Scott,
and
stop, please. Well, we have the
you
world.
Did have one thing.
Yes, well, too. We have the World AIDS Day. That's going to be December the 1st. So I'll bring more information on that. And also this weekend from 9 to 12 at Eager Park in Imperial, in the beautiful city of Imperial, because I live there. They're going to have take your pets. They're going to have Santa Claus there, and you can take a picture with Santa Claus and your pet. And that's $5 a picture. And all that money is going to go to provide low-cost neutering in spaying animals.
I hope they talked to Santa ahead of time and said, you're going to get some dogs.
And just make sure you bring your dog on a leash. So I'm going to take all four of my dogs. So
nice.
The great. Small ones.
Great. So go out there, support the Humane Society. That's this Saturday.
I don't know if it's the Humane Society.
Isn't it?
It's
some sort of pet support thing, though, right?
Yes, it's a support, but it's, it's to neuter and spay animals.
Yeah.
Low cost.
Yeah. Carbon footprint of a medium-sized dog is bigger than that of an SUV. Huh. Who'd have figured?
Where do you get that information, Scott?
I read progressive media. I read, science journals
so
and
what is
nerdy
the,
stuff
so
like that.
So what is the carbon footprint of us, of a human?
Oh, we're huge.
Then don't
compare. Well, no, you know what it is? The funny thing is basically, if you're human and you have a carbon footprint, the big difference tipper is flying. If you fly on jet airplanes, your carbon footprint just gets ginormous. So if you're not flying on airlines, you're probably one of the good guys.
Of course, I'm not.
A car and all that other stuff, enormous stuff, and four dogs. Anyway, welcome to the show today. Guest today is Dr. Kuza. Dr. Kuza is a long-time behavioral health employee.
Good morning.
We count you in decades
Scott
now, don't
Maria.
We?
Yes, it's 33 years almost.
Nice. And none the worse for wear, might I add.
Well, you lie well.
Welcome. 337-8874 is the phone number, as always. And we have a pretty hot topic today because, it's never really fun to talk about suicide, but it's really important because if you don't kind of kick off the stigma of that one, it can be dangerous because people walk around with this potential, and if we don't ever talk about it, then it gets ignored, and if it gets ignored, it can be dangerous. And typically we think of that as kind of teenage and above behavior, but Dr. Kuza, you're going to talk to us today about pre-adolescent.
Yeah, we'll be looking at an age group of folks 12 and under, 14 and under. There's been some high-profile cases here that are reported on CNN, for example, over the last few months of young children ending their lives and shocking the school and the community that they're in. And the context for those were typically bullying or children being identified by their peers or selected out by their peers as being homosexual, for example. But the real issue for them was some sort of loss of esteem or attack by peers that was very devastating to their psychological makeup, and they impulsively harm themselves, and this makes big news. But overall, if you look at the base rate for many of these suicides, if we go back to 2006, we have 56 suicides. So that's for children under 12. So that's a quite low number given the number population base of that age group, which is in the millions.
But typically, we don't hear that from, you know, children, you know, or pre-adolescents aged 14 and under to commit suicide. Usually that's the 16, 17-year-olds, 15,
correct.
You know, the teenagers.
Well, I think part of, yeah, you make a good point. I think part of the reason we see this downward trend of higher rates in this age group of self-harm is really the media. I mean, they get so much attention, and you have what we call a copycat effect. So these vulnerable young people are quite influenced, adversely influenced by this media attention to this phenomena. I mean, on one hand, you want to educate people that this does occur, and yet, in that process of education, you create more of the phenomena.
Nice. Now, because this rate is extraordinarily low,
yes,
for all the 12-year-olds and under, what are developmentally, are there some kind of naturally protective factors that have historically kept this rate fairly low? I mean, is there something about being a little kid that removes that option from the table, just in terms of conception, in terms of how they think, in terms of, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Well, I think for a long time there was the thinking that the children of this age do not become sad or depressed. They do. I think for the vast majority of people who engage in self-harm behavior, they have a number of stressors that they're dealing with at the time, and then there's typically some sort of trigger stress or some sort of additional demand upon them that creates this adverse impulse to end their life. So they could have a whole source of ongoing stressors, family stress, financial stress, school stress, peer stress, and so on. And then there's some additional trigger that happens that is on top of that chronic stress that serves as the trigger to these impulsive actions. So much of we can understand their behavior in the context that it occurs. You know, what else is happening with this child? So as I was saying earlier, with the group that has been in the news, it's typically they've been ostracized by their peers for one reason or another, being bullied or being identified as homosexual.
Well, and bullying is developmentally appropriate. I mean, it's really kind of something that kids do. Is that ubiquitous with being a kid, isn't it?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened. I mean, I remember even being at school, you know, kids were being bullied, you know, just being ostracized, just kind of like, no, don't hang out with her. Even, you know, you would be, no, if you hang out with her, you know, you don't.
Right, there's also.
It's always been like that, but now I think there's a lot of more with the Facebook and
texting
and.
People under 12 aren't allowed Facebook, so I just want to point that out.
Yeah, so you've added now the component of virtual or digital impact upon these kids. So in some of the high-profile cases that have been in the news, we have children who have been identified via texting or pictures sent over the Internet and telephones, and so all of a sudden it's not that you can be ashamed socially by one or two people, but through the magic of the Internet, you can be shamed and ridiculed the whole community.
Nothing to stop a 10-year-old from posting some YouTube of another 10-year-old doing something that they really didn't want the rest of the world to know what's going on.
The thing is, it was happening at school, and it would stop at school. But now, it's just constant.
They're under a boundary.
Yeah,
right. The Internet has no boundaries. It's on 24/7.
Exactly, yeah.
And given the nature of the medium, you can spread that ugly information out real. Viral is the word they use, through the whole community. Yeah.
Okay, but the natural checkmate on that, I suppose, is, okay, let's put kids back into their little bubble of kidness and restrict their bullying to school sites and, I don't know, put like a whole password code on the Internet so they can never get in. Of course, they'll figure it out. But that seems like a fairly restrictive way of looking. I mean, there's kids learn a lot on the Internet, too. I mean,
of course.
So how do you balance that? Is there?
I think that cat is out of the bag. I don't think there's anything you can do anymore about that. Yeah, it's just one of the ugly realities.
It's a point of management then. Rather than putting the cat back in the bag, it's like, okay, the cat's out now. What do we do?
Well, it has right. You come back down to what has always been the protective factor for children. That is the parents. And what are they doing to protect this child from these adverse influences? And it's hard to detect. Again, given the base rate for suicide of 2.6 child per 100,000, which is exceptionally low, it's hard to detect either by the school or by the parent that the child is so adversely impacted.
Like is likely to be struck by lightning or something odd.
Yes, yes. It's a very rare phenomenon.
Okay. Well, 337-8874 is the phone number. Here with Dr. Kuzi. He's a psychologist for behavioral health in his 34th year.
Almost, of
psychology for the county. And working pretty much exclusively in children's, huh? You mostly
just pretty much children's and the emergency department.
And the after hours, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So I think it's a long time to have a relationship with the community, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. But
you're the guy. Okay, so we've got this extraordinarily rare phenomenon, but yet something that now is coming into our consciousness and going on to the media, and there's articles in Time magazine or whatever.
Right.
And so we begin to kind of look at what we can do to manage it. As you suggested, we can't really wrap up social. My daughter's now in fourth grade, and fourth graders developmentally begin to really appreciate and become experts at the art of sarcasm.
Right.
That they get it now.
Right.
And so that they're trying out their newfound tools, I suppose. And the school sends out a survey, as I suppose all schools, it's probably like federally mandated or something. And it has a bullying question on it. Is your child bullied at school? And when I ask her, the look on her face is so priceless. It's like you're asking me if the sun comes up in the morning.
Right, right. It's a phenomenon that begins
in
kindergarten.
Of course I get bullied.
In kindergarten you see these social cliques forming and one clique against the other, and then the devaluation of one clique against the other, and the boundaries of these cliques and groups changing as children get older. And so verbal bullying, intimidation, this is part of the politics of the playground.
We live in a culture where power is a valued commodity.
Yes. What did the Black Panther say? That violence is as American as apple pie.
and you've got these kids who are amateurs at carving out their power, I suppose. We come up with more subtle ways when we're grown-ups.
Right, right.
And who are they going to take power from? They're going to take power from the teachers or principal. That's not going to go over very big. The parents, well, maybe. Maybe get some power from the parents if I play my cards right. But their fellows, so pretty much that leaves fellow students. That leaves peers.
Right, right.
And unless they let you out on the little kids' playground once a day and you can just go around and wreak havoc on them.
Right.
And so you've got this human virtual need almost for power, for
control.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That it turns out to express itself in some sort of interpersonal way.
Right.
And it's kind of rocky because they're little kids. And you've got kids that suffer. I mean, perhaps the very, very peak of the mountain is pre-adolescent suicide. But you've got kids that are kind of suffering along quite a bit most days anyway.
That's correct. So these are kids typically who are dealing with multiple stressors on a daily basis. It could be fitting into their peer group at school. It could be problems at home, and typically academic issues. And so And this is very similar to adults who engage in self-harmful actions. They typically have multiple stressors at any one time, and then they have an acute episode that leads them to impulsively engage in some sort of self-harmful activity. The same dynamics is happening here with the pre-adolescent group. Typically, they're not presenting with that overt, observable distress or depression on a chronic basis, but they suffer.
Typically, what they don't present with is the way a stressed out adult looks. Is that what we're?
Well, they may have some overlaps, such as impaired sleep onset or sleep continuity.
Little dark circle eyed kids.
Or chronic worry or chronic sadness or social isolation. And again, these also may be signs that we see with adults or older children. But typically for the younger children, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's more contextually driven that these impulsive actions would occur. That is, there's some sort of social wounding that goes on, and that's wounds their sense of self or diminishes their sense of self. And with a lack of a place to put that distress into context, such as having parents who
it's
can...
It's not just a job, it's an adventure. Is that good?
Is a parent available or a guardian available that would serve as a buffer to mitigate that sort of internal distress?
So let's kind of, I guess, take a break because it's top of the hour, and then let's come back and kind of reset from maybe a proactive stance on things that parents and children and adults can do to kind of mitigate some of these factors. And
okay,
maybe that'll make for a good show. All right.
All righty.
This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. We're here today with Dr. Kuza, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXOradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your voice for radio wellness here in the Imperial Valley, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. My name is Scott. Maria has wandered away to parts unknown. We miss her. We were having a moment of
grief.
Remembrance, yes. But she's out doing her job, helping people out.
Well, God bless Maria.
Yes, absolutely. Wonderful person. And truly enjoy spending every Thursday morning with her doing radio. So, but we'll carry on. We'll do this.
We'll do our best.
337-8874 is the phone number. Mario's on the board. Showing me stuff that he thinks my 50-year-old eyes can actually pick out from across the room on a cell phone. Nice. Beautiful. Okay, and we are here with Dr. Kuza, who is a psychologist for Imperial County Behavioral Health. We're talking about pre-adolescent suicide.
Yes.
Which is people under the age of 12 who maybe they never committed suicide in big numbers because it never even occurred to them.
Well, you know, you would think that under stress, people have these escapist fantasies. But I think that when the media blows up all these cases and in a very dramatic fashion, there's children learn from that phenomenon. I know when, for example, a child or adolescent may engage in some sort of suicidal act here locally, then. For weeks afterwards, we have copycat.
Sure, the school is a buzz.
The school is a buzz with all that information and that other kids are observing and learning. And a lot of social secondary gain comes from that. And children are learning because of the ubiquitousness and pervasiveness of psychiatric medications among the childhood population and the downward movement of psychiatric medications into younger and younger children, we have younger children now hearing more of this psychiatric jargon. For example, children saying, well, you know, I'm hearing voices. where you know they hear that is a typical.
It's an insider quote, basically.
It's an insider quote, and children say these things because this psychiatric language, so to speak, has become more prevalent, and then they copy that. And so children are, when they get into some sort of distress or trouble, are saying, I'm hearing voices, and adults believe them. And they get a lot of secondary gain for that. And so the point I was coming to is with the suicidal actions. So we have children and adolescents exposed to this information on the media, and they learn from this. They see the secondary gain that comes from that.
So now it's occurred to them.
Now it's occurred to them that this is a possibility. And then,
and they see everybody's eyes get big, I'm sure.
Yes, and then also
and also
the means for self-harm, whether by firearm or by poisoning and so on. And this is learned quite quickly through modeling.
So all they need is one news program or one good TV show or one person in their community that acts this way to kind of get the information.
Serve as a template, yes.
And then combine their suffering with their natural curiosity, and you've got the makings of a mess.
Yes. So again, the media is a way of promoting that modeling in an exponential way that you really didn't get,
like the Clairol commercial. I told two friends, and they told two friends, and so on.
Oh,
yes. Remember that?
Good point, yes.
That was a really good commercial to kind of visually represent how all of a sudden something just catches fire.
Yes.
Nice. So we've got a tipping point. We've got a tipping point we may not want a tipping point with, and that is people under the age of 12 getting information about poor managed wealth. Perhaps long-term ineffective management strategies of psychiatric distress. Is there more psychiatric distress for youth nowadays, or is this always been? I mean, is that part of the factor? Or?
I don't think so. I think the stress levels have been pretty stable over the years. I mean, people say, "Well, this age is more stressful than that age," and I say, "Well, what about World War II? That seemed to be a pretty stressful
period." Or when you stepped out of your cave and the lion was waiting for you.
Right, or the Depression in the 1930s.
My hunter and gatherer folks couldn't get enough food this year. We're going to starve.
But we also have increasing levels of poverty in this country, increasing levels of record amount of people on food stamps, record amount of people unemployed, record amount of people losing their homes. There are stressors unique to this age. I don't know if it was necessarily more stress than other ages, but stressors quite unique to our age that we're not experienced in handling. So if there are 7 million people who are in the process of foreclosure and losing their homes, you would think that would have a substantial impact on the mental health of this nation, let alone the preteen.
Presuming that life goes on in some sort of sustainable fashion, do you think that we'll get like a depression generation rebound? I mean, my grandparents were depression era people who were kind of youth, young adults in the depression, and by golly, it informed their way of managing the world.
Yes, well, I think that's happening currently young people, children will now say, yes, my house was in foreclosure, and we had to leave that house because the bank came and took it away. And that's going to be happening, is happening all across the nation, and will continue to happen. So I think this will have one type of impact upon the youth of the young adults of America, the youth of America, that they will carry forward. This could be the... this could be one of those depression-era factors. We're not really going through a recession. We're going through a depression here currently, and this could be one factor that they carry forward, the prototypical sort of imagery of 2010 America.
Maybe if we give them enough non-nutritive sugar-laced food, they'll be okay, huh?
Yes.
So, okay, so... So we have levels of stress that are constant as humans, including children.
Right.
And stress management becomes one of the telling kind of developmental things that we have to do. And kids need to be taught stuff like this, I suppose.
Yes, we have to teach them how to put these changes that they experience into some sort of context. Yes, this happens, this bad thing happens, or that bad thing happens. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad person.
Is the best way to pretend nothing bad's happening, maybe? Just whistle by the graveyard? Would that work?
No, it never works.
Oh, darn. Plan B.
No, I think there is a real subculture in this country that pretends that childhood should be a
idyllic
Disneyland sort of experience, where indeed that's not the reality of it. If we just take a perspective from other nations, at least a billion people on the planet live on $1 a day. So I think their childhood experiences are quite different and lead to children who can deal with stressors and adversities on a much different level than we're exposing our children to.
Ooh, we're a nation of spoiled babies.
Well, our high standard of living certainly.
Yet we're still stressed, and yet we weren't able to escape normal human state of feeling pressure.
Right, right. For the country that is supposedly the richest, but now the most in debt country, and all of our luxuries and conveniences and so on and so forth has not made us happier people. It's not made us more content people. It's not made us more productive people.
So I need to go home and say, darling, I thought lots of stuffed animals would make the difference, and I'm learning now that that's not true. Let's begin to talk about your stress. If I'm a parent, should I begin by kind of beginning to monitor my child's stress level? Would that be good, sir?
Yes, providing them with, healthy food and plenty of sleep and recreation and interaction with a nurturing
parent. So there's natural things that tend to environmentally reduce ambient stress.
Right, and form buffers and mitigating experiences to help put that stress into context for young people. Again, providing a healthy foundation and productive activities
So keep them moving, in a sense, huh?
Yes, keep them moving, keep them active, keep them productive, and teach young people that stress and fear and loss are natural parts of living. It is inescapable, but that they have the capacity to manage it on a day-to-day basis is one very important first step to begin with. I think we can also move on to some sort of institutional types of buffers to the stress. We can, for example, train schools and community leaders to identify young people who might be at high risk for suicidal thoughts or threats or attempts. We can educate young people about suicide and risk factors associated with that. We can implement screening and referral programs.
Who's been carved out of the pack, basically, huh? I mean, I'm thinking in terms of a school and looking at somebody who may be at higher risk and beginning to intervene in some proactive ways on that.
Well, I know here locally that the threshold for the school interacting with children who make various threats of self-harm or threats to others is quite low. A student making that statement will typically elicit a response from the school, for example. The police are called and they're placed on a hold and
evaluated. Well, because it's like going through airport security. It's just you don't goof or there's certain things you don't. So, and we live in a border community. We drive across. The border people ask us, where we're coming from and where we're going and where we have to declare, and we don't make funny offhand or scary comments. ever. Right?
Right, right. So many of the...
Zero tolerance.
Right, zero tolerance. I think that's the message the schools are giving and implementing is zero tolerance. And so the threshold is quite low. So simply making that statement oftentimes leads to a referral.
You get a lot of attention then, too.
You get a lot of attention. You also get to go out of school, leave school. And for some.
So if school was your distressing point, I mean, if school was the distressing factor,
right.
you get a moment of stress relief in exchange for your dramatic statement.
Yes, yes. That happens, unfortunately. It happens with regularity with some children.
Inadvertent reinforcement or something, huh?
Inadvertent or secondary gain.
Okay, but on the other hand, you know, you get this risk management issue standing over you, peering down at you, going, if something bad happens here, it is the end of the world.
Right, right. Everyone is, many of the agencies are quite risk adverse, and just the slightest hint of that leads to proactive steps by these agencies.
So agencies may be better served, it sounds like, just having some sort of acknowledging stress as being a part of life.
Right.
And acknowledging, including bullying, I suppose, because that's, you know, again, part of life.
That's the stress of the month.
It is, but the ad campaign is like, stomp out bullying. Is that oxymoronic, or am I missing the point?
Well,
you're going to outbully bullying. Hello.
Yeah, as we touched upon earlier in the radio program, bullying is and social ostracism is a part of the growing up experience in human groups, and that human group for children is school.
Yeah, yeah.
So bullying is inescapable. I know it was happening when I was going to school, and it's happening before I went to school, and it's happening now. It's something we will not escape. I think one of the things that we can do as agency is develop peer support programs if that's an issue at school, or establishing, which we have in our community, for example, through the SURE helpline, suicide crisis centers and hotlines. A very obvious way that we don't think about is restricting access to highly lethal methods of suicide. For example, the vast majority of suicides.
Is this a Second Amendment issue? Are you going there?
I'm on that right now. 65% of suicides are via weapons, pistols. It's a highly lethal.
Which probably shouldn't be in kids' hands most of the time anyway, and under very strict
right.
supervision.
Or either supervised or locked away, or they have these child safety locks that they put on pistols and weapons and so on, for example. For children, that's typically...
So restricting lethal means... identifying, early identification of anxiety. You know, one of the things maybe is just something as simple as regularly checking in with whatever kids happen to be in anyone, any adult's personal environment. And just saying, how are you? How do you feel? What's going on today? Where are we at? And seeing if there are signs of distress. And then being able to kind of go with that and either model some sort of resiliency that they haven't remembered that they have, or you know something.
And you can also just simply ask the question: are you thinking of harming yourself? Are you thinking of ending your life? And there's been a misbelief or misinformation that simply saying this to children will increase the probability.
So media exposure on the one hand and dramatization of it, it does kind of plant a seed in a way.
It obviously plants a seed. It also serves as a model. It can also serve as a model for good also by teaching parents that to talk about this issue is not necessarily going to push the child in that direction. Just as talking about drugs will not push a child to use drugs, talking about suicide and ending one's life will not push one to do that.
Seems like you almost start by talking about distress or talking about stress that turns into distress, or talking about the pressure of growing up or something,
right.
And see where that is at, and then kind of cover the whole spectrum. And,
yes.
And part of the spectrum is the distress is so intolerable that you think by maybe harming yourself that it's going to be better.
Right. It's usually very little thinking goes into the activity. It's mostly the self-harm activity for this group is typically quite impulse-driven. With little.
So stopping and talking about it actually derails the impulse. Yeah.
It certainly could. It certainly could. It begins to diffuse the buildup of anxiety and faulty thinking or irrational thinking that these young people can engage in, where they have to conclude that suicide is the only answer, where there are a whole spectrum of other ways.
Well, yeah, you don't want an 8-year-old actually trying to balance that question out anyway, because 8-year-olds haven't really developed the capacity for what
full,
we consider
rational thinking.
Exactly. Exactly. They're not there yet.
They're not there yet. Another issue that we can look at.
We, on the other hand, are getting close, I think. It's right over the horizon for you and I, right? Rational thinking.
It's almost there.
We are.
It's almost there.
How many more miles, Doctor?
But anyway, I think another way that agencies can help mitigate and intervene in these issues is that when some child does act in a self-harmful manner, that they intervene so that other children can observe that, to see that there is help for them.
Nice. I can see that. So it's proactive modeling.
It's proactive modeling. Just as we were saying, there's adverse modeling, there is also proactive modeling. Yes.
Good, good. Now, if anybody has... If there are agency people or concerned parents or others that have heard this and said, you know, this is great stuff, I need to learn some more about it, where are some places they could go to get reliable, good information?
There are some. There's a lot of resources, actually. If you go to the Internet, there's the American Association of Suicidology. I think if you just simply go to Google and type in suicide prevention or suicide statistics or suicide... whatever, you'll get more than enough information. Here locally, we have, of course, the SURE helpline, and we have the resources of the Imperial County Behavioral Health Services Department. And we have a 24-hour hotline and are on standby 24-hour day duty.
Okay, great. Thanks for coming aboard today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Always a pleasure to see you. I miss you. I enjoyed working with you tremendously.
Well, I enjoyed the years together we've worked.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Now, just kind of a word before we cut out here. I want to point out that, again, KXLRadio.com is the website from which all podcasts related to Let's Talk About It spring. So if you are interested in the show today or think someone else may be interested in the show today, I by all means encourage you to go over to the website, KXLRadio.com, click on What's New, click on Let's Talk About It, click on Mario's professionally edited version of this broadcast, and help educate the public and keep us all safe and take care of our kids for us. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXLRadio.com.